from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Alongside Seth Payne this morning in for Sean Pendergast, I'm Sean Bajani. Good morning. Final hour of the program is underway. Appreciate you making us a part of your morning. If you'd like to be a part of the show, hit us up. 713-572-4610, 572-4610. So while Jose Altuve is saying F you to the All-Star game, at least once more this season, potentially in the future, any other time that he's given the nod and earns the recognition, we'll see, but maybe just totally content with the nine nods in All-Star nods that he's gotten in his career, illustrious career. We got a good text, I thought. It's a fair question, and it's been one that you've probably addressed before, Seth, during the break. Does it affect his Hall of Fame eligibility? And my response to the texter was, it's certainly possible, and the reason why is that it's voted on by human beings with opinions. And whether or not you agree with them or disagree with those opinions, it's going to be at the forefront 5 years after Jose Altuve retires. We're going to find out then just how strong those opinions still are, were before, at that point in time.
I think the one thing that they did do is they cleaned up the Hall of Fame voting somewhat. I mean,
yeah, they're trying to as it goes. Yeah,
there were a bunch of dudes, or a bunch of people who were like, they were Hall of Fame voters, and they weren't even actively covering baseball anymore, or even any time in the recent past or whatever. Mm-hmm. I think that it's a more knowledgeable group of voters now. For better or for worse, that's subjective too. But I do think that within baseball and within baseball insiders or people that are actually clued in, there's just about zero like bad feelings towards Altuve the scandal and everything else like that. I don't know how much empathy or what have you or understanding they have of why Altuve wouldn't want to go.
Yeah.
But I'd be surprised if that's what kept him out of the Hall of Fame. I think when it's time for Altuve to come up for the Hall of Fame, I think that might be when his name gets cleared in a lot of ways, because people are going to be writing about it and talking about it, and there'll be hot takes galore. But for the most part, if you want to actually have a substantive take on it, at that point they'll put things in context.
Yeah,
right now people just barely even touch it, and fans are just what they are.
Sure. We know how these things go, and
yeah,
we can talk about it logically and with the facts at hand all we want to. We just know how these things tend to go. I've long said, and look, I understand sometimes I can get a little wordy in my explanation of things, but this seems to come as easy for me as anything else. I have long said that in regard to the whole steroid era and anything scandalous that has kept the greatest of the greats out of a respective Hall of Fame, it's going to come down to a point in time in which those individuals or like-minded individuals with those opinions, maybe right, maybe wrong, certainly unpopular to those respective fan bases,
yeah,
die. And when they die, and as you say, these new, younger, more knowledgeable, you know, different way of thinking, people that grew up in this era that have a vote and will have a vote, take precedent and make up the majority, rather, will then maybe see change. And so for that reason, because there is a veterans committee, I will never say Roger Clemens, Barry Bonds, Rafael Palmeiro, Sammy Sosa, all those steroid guys will never get in the Hall of Fame. I can't say that responsibly because, again, once again, you just don't know. Those people that hold the power, that have held it over their heads for such a long period of time, they're not dead yet. Some are, but not all of them.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, it's kind of like the first thing you said, which was that it was it's a bunch of humans making the decision.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, hey, how's the Supreme Court decision going to go? You might have a really good opinion about how you feel it should go, but ultimately, it's a group of human beings making that decision about whichever Supreme Court face.
Yes.
So are you going to be angry at the Supreme Court or excited about the Supreme Court when it comes time for Altuve's case to come up? That's nobody knows. It's a human decision.
You don't know. And then, yes, it's a human decision, and sometimes when you get the chance to read those decisions from the Supreme Court or whoever else, you question if it really is, in fact, an actual human being with some of those judgments.
When it comes to just like, if you just look at all-time war wins above replacement, you know, Altuve, I think, is down around 54 or so right now. And when you start to get up into the level of like 68, 67, there's very few guys above that who are not in the Hall of Fame. And like just by that, and that encompasses a whole lot of the other stats that they use when looking at this stuff. But just by war alone, as long as Altuve stays healthy for the next several years, it will likely look very much like, okay, he's a slam dunk Hall of Famer.
Yeah, for sure. But I mean, not even war alone. Look at OPS plus and just look collectively.
Right. That's what I mean. All those stats that get factored. Basically, all those things fuel all that. Then, you're going to end up with, a Hall of Fame career.
Much more than a very compelling case.
It'll be, right. I think the bigger argument with Altuve, and this is where it gets really, really human, is whether he makes it in on the first ballot or not. You know, like if it gets to the point where if he plays forever and stays at a high level and it looks like, okay, there's just no argument for keeping him out of the Hall of Fame at all, then are they gonna look at it? Are there going to be a lot of voters who are kind of like, yeah, but, and keep them out for the first couple go rounds? Then we'll have to be enraged all anew. It'll be very frustrating.
Get ready for it. We've got a lot of years, hopefully, before we even have to worry about that. To a far lesser degree, in terms of maybe a Houstonian given double rods to not being recognized properly, CJ Stroud, I thought, was severely disrespected last night in the ESPYs. I don't know if he was actually on hand. I didn't get a chance to watch it, but I do know that he was the lone representative from the city of Houston that plays for a professional sports franchise that was up for the best breakthrough athlete, along with Juju Watkins. Be honest, who is she? Do you know her? I don't believe you. Well, she's a USC women's college basketball player. Haley Bryant, do you know her? I don't believe you if you say yes. She's a gymnast for LSU. Victor Wembanyama, everybody knows that dude. And then CJ Stroud. Those are your four candidates to win Best Breakthrough Athlete of the Year of 2023. And Juju Watkins won. And that, to me, was the shocker of all things ESPYs last night. It was the first award handed out. So what a dud. Like, I would have been pissed if, you know, I'd been looking forward to this ESPYs and if I'd actually gotten a chance to watch it and it's the first award and then the one slam dunk, you know, that I thought it was going to be, CJ Stroud, it's got to be him. If I would have heard Juju Watkins live, I think I would have flipped my you know what.
Well, I think part of it is that it's, look, the ESPYs are, they are what they are, which is, it's always been, it's what these award shows are in a lot of respects. It's like, oh, this network creates an award because it's a nice way to get a whole bunch of famous people in a room and get some attention and some views at a time of the sports year when it's very, very quiet. There's just not a whole lot going on unless your baseball team is good. And that's why the ESPYs are in the period when they are. And so much of like this, though, it feels so much like, yeah, this is completely all about ESPN doing that and also trying to push women's basketball, which is cool and all. Like, if that's where you want to go as a network, cool. But like, just don't create this award where you've got professional athletes in the same boat as college athletes and other notable players. Like, it's just it's a different level. You're having pros compete against basically minor leaguers, and it's annoying. It's just really, really annoying. I wish CJ hadn't even been up for the award.
I know.
Or at the very least, it had been him. There could have been a pro breakout player of the year, and a college breakout player of the year, whatever it might be.
Make it make sense, right? But yeah. Even by the literal definition and description of who the award is supposed to recognize, and this is according to the Wikipedia page of the ESPY's Best Breakthrough Athlete. It says, it's awarded to the sports person judged to have made the greatest breakthrough in a major international individual sport or North American professional team sport. Okay. The award is typically given to a sports person in his or her rookie season at a given level, but may be won by any athlete who in a given year improves his or her performance dramatically or otherwise becomes well recognized. In no way, shape, or form. We can always disagree on the definition, the literal meaning of it, but you can't tell me that in any way, shape, or form, you think that describes Juju Watkins or Haley Bryant. I would not even be passionately angry if it would have been Victor Wembanyama wins it, because the guy's a freak. Even though he played for an ass team in the San Antonio Spurs this year, he was a badass player. CJ Stroud, a badass player. But the real boot here is his team was good. His team was actually good, C.J. Stroud's was. So not only was he the best at what he did in his first year, but his team was the best at what they did in his first year in the most important position in all of sports.
Yeah, yeah. And they ended up, so I guess the improvement of the team, I suppose, USC women's basketball did get a lot better last year, I believe, and so that at least makes some sense. But it's just they just shouldn't even be in the same category.
Oh yeah, but everybody talks about women's college basketball on the mainstream.
Right, I know. And it's just, I feel dirty even discussing it because it's a stupid, dirty trick by ESPN, and it's also an opportunity for people to jump on and try to make it political or that it's based on gender or something like that. It's a dirty trick. It's a dirty trick, which is, I think it's actually fitting that this was their first award because it's the dirtiest trick ESPN can pull, which is trying to create controversy out of something that's a completely artificial creation, the ESPYs themselves.
That
somehow, if you start standing up for the football, start standing up for the pro football player, then it's because you hate women or what have you. It's dirty. It does not create a separate category for these two very disparate levels of notoriety and notability.
Yeah, and you're right. I know it's kind of a made up thing, but still, when it's one of your guys,
it turns into Sean Vajani hates women. So that's the problem. That's why you didn't want it. You wanted the man to win it, didn't it? That's what it is. That's what it turns into.
Turn it
Sean.
Into that all you want
damn,
to.
You damn chauvinist pig shock jock.
Yeah.
That's what's wrong with you, I'll tell you.
That's how I've been pegged for. That's how I've been pegged for the last 18 years as shock jock. 100%. I'll wear that badge.
Stroud, as much love as Stroud has gotten in this offseason, I still feel like people don't quite get it and don't understand how, and you know, I think that's part of it, though, too, Sean. I think a lot of the it's because a lot of the same people at ESPN were the same ones that were thinking like, yeah, of course Bryce Young's better than CJ Stroud. Oh, of course the Texans are going to suck this year. Oh, yeah. Did you see his receivers? They're bums. They got that cognitive dissonance thing going on to where now they're saying, well, yes, of course. Look at CJ, he had success. Of course. Look at his receivers. Yes. This is exactly, well, of course. Look at his record at Ohio State. Of course he was going to be the better quarterback.
Yeah. He's Seth Payne, Sean Bajani in for Sean Pendergast. So while ESPN may have dropped the ball once again and ignored completely CJ Stroud and his accomplishments at the ESPYs last night, he actually did get some love on this week's episode of Hard Knocks. We'll have that for you next. It's Sports Radio 610.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.
In life, some days are good, and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey, and then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not-so-good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey, and welcome it. It's unique, and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Get your head in the financial game with smart investing and budgeting tips straight from the nerds. NerdWallet's experts will set future you up for success with dependable, fact-based insights. No financial misinformation allowed. Learn how to save on your summer vacation, find your next credit card or loan for a big purchase, and invest in your next index fund. Make smarter decisions in 2024. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy day beds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
And for Sean Pendergast, I'm Sean Bajani along with Seth Payne. I've got some important information regarding Hurricane Beryl food drives and stuff like that to pass along to you in just a second. But I do just want to say, text message of the morning, you win from the 713. CJ should have got up and slapped the host as he was about to announce, keep Juju Watkins' name out of your mouth. I love it. And going a la
Kanye.
Yeah.
I don't know if I want CJ going all Kanye. Never go full
Will
Kanye.
Smith. Kanye. When Kanye? Will Smith.
Will Smith. Oh, that's right. Will Smith. Sorry.
Slap the snot out of Chris Rock.
Yeah, but it would have been more like the Kanye would have made more sense when he went up and, you know, took the award away from Taylor Swift because he felt that Beyonce actually deserved it.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
if he had actually done and acted on his own, trying to, you know, good call. Yeah, I was mixing the Will Smith I completely forgot about the Will Smith incident.
Yeah.
I would say neither of those situations. But I certainly don't want CJ going full Kanye.
I never believe.
If he goes full Will Smith and gets into Scientology or something, I'll be a little bit nervous. But if he goes full Kanye, I don't even need him to go an eighth Kanye. Just keep me in CJ Stroud.
I might be in the minority here, but I always thought that was a fake incident, if you will. I never
Will Smith one?
Yeah, I didn't believe it actually happened. thought it was...
given the aftermath and Chris Rock talking about it and Will Smith talking about it and everything, there's no way in hell it was fake. That was real, man.
I don't know. Let me pass this...
Okay. I had my questions and doubts, too, but, like, in the aftermath...
To be honest with you, I don't recall, nor do I even think I would, because maybe I didn't watch the aftermath. I just moment...
No, it's not the aftermath, like, immediately after. It's, like, Chris Rock in some of his comedy routines, and then, like, in Will Smith talking about it.
That's what I mean. I didn't watch any of that.
Like, 2 years.
Yeah, I didn't watch any of that. I just, in the moment, I was like, yeah, this is crap. I don't believe this. This is some, you know, horrible attempt to just get more eyeballs, you know, and people talking about it on social. The Astros Foundation, today, from 8 until 11, so this is ongoing out at Minute Maid Park. They are, I think you mentioned this earlier, Seth, they've got ice and water distribution at 501 Crawford Street. Again, they're running from 8 until 11. Chick-fil-A, the Houston Food Bank, and the Red Cross is going to be providing items for those in need today. Ice, water, Chick-fil-A, entree, fruit, and disaster relief items in case you are one of those in need. They've got that going on at Minute Maid. Now, the Houston Rockets and Toyota Center have got something going on today as well at 9 a.m. Cars will be able to line up at the intersection of Polk and La Branch. They'll take care of you there. They've got some items of need for you. Tyson Foods is going to be present at the Walmart parking lot, South Wayside Drive, 2391 South Wayside Drive. From 11 until 4 today as well, just in case. And if you'd like more information on that, our friends over at click2houston.com have multiple locations of hydration stations and things you can get food and other disaster items in case you're in need of that today as well. And into the weekend, I would imagine, as the cleanup continues, Seth.
At the very least... You know, I know you're one of the people that's still without power. At the very least, I know it doesn't sound awesome, but it's projected highs of, doesn't get much over 91 over these next several days. So you're not going to have 103 degree temperatures, but I mean, 91 with no air conditioning is obviously no day at the park.
It is.
Or at least it's a very miserable day at the park where you're trying to act like you're enjoying the barbecue. Yeah.
I was trying to figure out what I want. What I would rather have, you know, like it'd be a little warm with no AC, you know, still like I told you, like for me personally, I've already adapted to that. Like I'm good. I can make it through. And I know there's a lot of people out there that do struggle with the heat, obviously, at various age levels. Certainly the elderly, you worry about them.
Yeah,
but
the nursing
my gosh,
homes, it's really tough.
If I have to get or hear about an update today saying severe thunderstorms are rolling through your area, power outage is possible. I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't know. I don't know if I could take that.
Got scattered thunderstorms tomorrow and isolated on Sunday.
Stop it right now. Stop it right now. I don't want to hear
this. They're scattered. So long.
Oh, my goodness. All right. So tell me why CJ got a little love on this week's episode of Hard Knocks.
So Hard Knocks is following the Giants through the offseason. And the second episode was the Giants preparing for the scouting combine and kind of starting to go over all the prospects, explaining them to coaches. Here are some Giant scouts discussing. Okay, this actually is the wrong.
Oh, yeah, the wrong audio clip in there, did you?
Yeah. No, it's not. Sorry. I was in the wrong place on the show rundown. Okay, so Marvin Harrison, who played at Ohio State with C.J. Stroud, obviously, and had some great success with him, but did not play with C.J. Stroud the second year. Mm-hmm. This is the Giants scouts kind of grilling Marvin Harrison about how he handles dealing with playing with a bad quarterback.
You know, obviously played with one of the best quarterbacks for a few years. How about you got a young guy, he's growing in the position. You beat a guy like this, got a chance for a touchdown, he underthrows it. What do you come back to the huddle saying to him?
Oh, I don't say nothing to quarterbacks.
No?
I don't say nothing to quarterbacks.
Miss throw, right?
I can make a play. Uh-huh. I can make the plays, though.
Yeah. So I'm going to take the cheese
off. I will never say anything to the quarterback. I always blame it on myself as going to make the play.
Yeah.
You know, the funny thing about that is, so obviously he's talking about one of the best. He was playing with C.J. Stroud before that, and then he had to play with Kyle McCord. Like, he didn't have to bring Kyle McCord's being a bad quarterback into it. You know, like it was just about that bad throw on that specific play. But it might have been calculated in that, I'm going to get this guy to talk about how miserable it was with playing with Kyle McCord after having played with. It almost felt like, by the way, we're not so sure Daniel Jones is actually all that good either. You might. How would it feel going from C.J. Stroud to Daniel Jones? How would you handle that? So maybe, I guess it maybe is relevant that they brought Kyle McCord into it.
What did that scout say right there, Seth? He's like, that was a bleep. That was a bleep throw, wasn't it?
Yeah. So and they said trying to get you to take the cheese. So they were like inviting. They were inviting Marvin Harrison to say something bad about Kyle McCord, and like Marvin Harrison isn't going to do that. If you've watched any interviews with Marvin Harrison, you'd almost think that he was maybe a youth minister more so than a football player. You're like I was surprised there weren't any clips coming out about him. You know, when they start worrying about a guy being too nice, that's always my favorite knock on a player. Like, I don't know, he might be too much of a gentleman. So there's no way in hell Marvin Harrison was going to take that, make that mistake,
right,
and
right.
blame it on him.
No, he was great there. I'm trying to envision, like, how that would have gone if, in fact, like, that was Shedeur Sanders being asked that question, or, like, Travis Hunter. You know, somebody just, like, in that fashion, like, trying to get him to talk crap about a former teammate, like, that was a bleep throw, wasn't it? Or that was a really crappy route run there, wasn't it? And Shedeur Sanders was like, yeah, man, that fool sucks. I should have had a touchdown on that play. You know, something like that. That's probably going to happen at some point.
Did you see Shadur's quote about how they're everybody's Super Bowl this year?
Yes.
The Colorado Buffaloes are everybody's Super Bowl.
I don't know how I feel about it. I feel like if he would have said that ahead of last season, I could have actually gotten behind it, but they were exposed multiple times last year for just folding when they went up against far better competition, or teams that were that they were supposed to be on, you know, a similar kind of level par with, and they failed miserably.
Well, there could have been an element of truth to it if Colorado was going to get the same level of hype that they were getting last year.
Yeah.
I think that went away real quickly. Once they lost a few games and it was clear that, this is not a good football team. I don't remember anything. I know for sure that College Game Day wasn't there past the Oregon game or whenever it was. I don't quite think that the media hype's going to be the same when you face Colorado this year. Although people are, I am intrigued by Shedeur Sanders, and I do want to watch him behind whatever type of offensive line he has this year. The other thing that I thought was interesting here was some people might have seen this clip on Hard Knocks from Hard Knocks on social media over the last couple days, and like, honestly, people were pointing to it like Jaden Daniels was an idiot because of this clip, and like, oh, I can't believe he screwed up this question. Without paying too much attention to the X's and O's, we're not going to get into deep dive strategy or anything here. Just listen and tell me if this actually sounds like something that you feel like a guy should nail immediately.
Hey, Jay, erase that Z, make him the F. Erase the X and make him the Z. Erase the W, make him the X. Erase the T and make him the H. Ready?
Yep.
Gun trolley right, 64 house X in. Give it back to me. Nope, don't look at it.
Oh, you want me?
Give it back to me how we call it.
The whole play?
Yeah.
Gun trolley right, house F in.
Okay, X in.
X in.
That's okay. And then if it's cover one, what do we want you to do? Probably.
Don't touch them.
All right, I like that answer.
Oh, he says I like
just
that answer.
The dumbest thing ever. Like, people are crushing this guy for that?
For saying F instead of X.
Exactly.
When stupid. He had just... So, to paint the picture, Brian Daboll has him up at the whiteboard. Jaden Daniels has just drawn this play up on the board that he ran in college. And he has him turn away from the board. Well, he has him switch all the receiver numbers or names out.
Mm-hmm.
and turn around and then just wants him to recite it with a new terminology or with a new positions. And he said X, which he always says instead of F, or he says F instead of X, whatever it was. For the life of me, I don't know how people were taking that. It was like somehow some mark of a guy that just doesn't get it or something. That's like if you try to teach me French in a moment and I screw up one of the words that I say all the time, that somehow that's an indication on your overall intelligence level.
But, you know, think about this. Again, the situation is probably a little bit different for Jaden Daniels if, in fact, he's in a meeting room with a coach during a game plan week and he knows that actually matters, right? Whereas he knows he's being, you know, grilled here and drilled to test this, that, and the other thing. And I only say that because listen to his initial response. When Dable's like, hey, are you ready? He's like, yeah. You know, it's like, it's kind of like, yeah, okay, let's see. What do you got? I have no idea what you're about to do. So, yeah.
He wouldn't have a clue what was about to happen or anything.
Right.
Yeah,
when
he said throw a touchdown, that's the part where, okay, that's not what Dable was looking for, even though he says I like that answer. He was looking for him to, like, how would he actually respond to cover one in that situation? But I totally get, like, I don't think there was one part of Dable that wanted him, like, that Jaden Daniels needed to get that 100% correct, or that's it for Jaden Daniels. It's in a lot of situations like that, sometimes you want guys to mess up, but you want to see how they're messing up and how they respond to it and react to it. And really just like, how much do they really understand about the plays they were running and all of that? It's not like, this is not like some exam that you got to score a 98 on and otherwise all is lost.
Exactly.
But, but it also, man, it got me stressed out, because the other thing about it is you're sitting there in a room. It's not just Brian Daboll and Jaden Daniels. It's like 20 other people that are all sitting there taking notes, watching you. You've got multiple cameras trained on you. And I think some of it, because I know there's all kinds of stories about them doing this in like medical school interviews. Mm-hmm. They basically give you a problem that's impossible to answer, and they don't care about whether or not you get the answer. They just want to see how well you react and respond to the stress.
Yeah.
And like, do you turn into a basket case or not? And you notice this with the quarterback interviews a lot, is that they just, quarterbacks, man, like the whole calm, cool, and collected part of it. Whether this actually transfers over from a meeting room to the field or not, that's a whole other topic. But they do tend to handle this stuff without their heart rates rising.
Yeah.
You know, like they know they're in a pressure situation and they're kind of taking it. And Jaden Daniels didn't look flustered or anything. I think Daboll's probably watching the body language and the response and the stress level more so than the actual answer.
He's Seth Payne, Sean Bajani in for Sean Pendergast. Coming up next, final segment here already. I know the answer to this, but do you know the answer to this? Are you really sure this is a great idea to bring back one of the greatest Texans ever? That's next.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Sean Bajani in for Sean Pendergast this morning, along with Seth Payne. Just a reminder for today, because it is ongoing right now. If you are still one of the ones in need of ice, water, a little food, disaster relief items, you can hit up 501 Crawford Street outside of Minute Maid Park, baby. That's where they're at. You've got Chick-fil-A, Houston Food Bank, and the Red Cross out there providing those items to continue to help those in need. Shout out to the Astros and the Astros Foundation for making that happen. Also, the Houston Rockets very much involved, along with Toyota Center. Rocket President of Business Operations Gretchen Shear, along with Harris County Commissioner Rodney Ellis and various Rocket legends. They are lining cars up right now as we speak. 9 o'clock is when it began. Cars lining up at the intersection of Polk and La Branch. They've got supplies for you in case you need them. And I know many, many people do. I've said this before too, Seth. A lot of the people that are in still need, and not all, but a lot of the people that are still in need of some of these supplies, they're kind of out and about in the suburban areas. I know maybe gas in those areas is a little scarce and, you know, long wait times to refill generators and cars and stuff like that. Drive into town because it is a different world, and you can also get maybe some supplies that you can take back home as well. to help you and your family through the rest of this week and into the weekend before you get power restored, hopefully, all of you, this weekend.
One of our listeners just sent this to us during the break. In case you were looking at Sports Illustrated and this headline got you distraught, mm-hmm. I don't want to just know that it's probably a typo, but on SI right now, headline, Houston Texans rank lowly in updated NBA power rankings following free agency. And it's got a picture of Şengün and Jalen Green on the bench. So my plan to play Şengün at center for the Texans, it doesn't seem to be probably, it looks like it's frowned upon by Sports Illustrated at this point. We'll keep you updated on it. I was like, looks like I wrote the headline. Me with my messing names up all the time. It's been up for like 45 minutes. It's still up there. The AI writers at SI have not yet figured out that they screwed up by calling the Rockets the Texans.
Yeah, man, get it together, SI. Let's fix that, huh? I asked this question. I already know the answer to it, but apparently there are detractors. There are conversations being had, and I think it would be mind-numbing for me to be a part of said conversations. I have not heard... I have not seen, read, anything that has ever made a good point about why the Texans should not bring J.J. Watt back. Obviously, that was big news again this week because of the Twitter picture that J.J. had put out of him looking all kinds of sculpted on Twitter.
Yeah, looking very much like he could play football right this moment. Compared to last year where he had kind of just been, you know, messing around in hotel gyms and stuff
play
and not
football
working out.
Or auditioning for an Abercrombie & Fitch model. Like, I don't know. Like, but certainly great.
I've had quite a few people come at me with counter arguments to it, and some of them have some good validity to it, because there would be some things where it wouldn't necessarily be a good idea. But part of it got me thinking about it, was when the Texans signed Jerry Hughes, I was kind of going around looking for some Jerry Hughes information, and I ran across this old interview of Will Anderson on the Greenlight podcast from last year's training camp. But Chris Long, the host, asked Will about Jerry Hughes. And this is what Will Anderson said about what a great influence Jerry Hughes had been for him at the time.
Yeah, it's been great. Like, Jerry probably doesn't even know, like, even though I ask him questions here and there, I literally watch everything Jerry does, from the way he warms up to the way he takes the field. I watch all his reps. I watch when he comes off the field. I watch when he has a break, everything. And he's constantly, with the thing that, like, separates him from everybody else, he's constantly working his craft. Yep. If it's on break, he's doing hands. He's doing, like, tight toe turns and everything like that. He's, like, just everything. And for me, just watching that, I said, that's how you stay in the league this long. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
He practices like he's still a rookie. You know what I'm saying? And that's what I respect about him so much. Like, you know, people joke a lot saying, like, take this day off, take that day off. He's like, no. You know what I'm saying? At this age, he still has that drive, everything. And he pours so much back into all the guys in the room. Like, he'll say, Coach, can you stop the tape? Will, you could have did this, you could have did that, and I'm just with my notepad writing it all down.
So, like, obviously, that's one really good influence to have on Will Anderson, is having Jerry Hughes there.
Yeah.
And it's not like it's cool because Will Anderson is not the kind of rookie that needs older guys around to tell him to, like, hey, sit up straight and actually pay attention. What are you doing? You know, like, Will doesn't need any guidance in terms of working hard. He's already got all of that. It's the actual technical stuff, the advice, the all of the football stuff and the rehab stuff, like all of that stuff. They are great resources for them.
Yeah.
For Will and those other young guys. And they've got, I mean, at this point now, with Jerry, who's going to be 36 years old, Mario Edwards is going to be in his 30s. Daniil Hunter is going to turn 31 or 30 this year. They've got, and I'm leaving
Danico Autry.
Out. Oh yeah, Danico Autry's 33.
Yeah,
like they've got some old heads in there to give him to give Will a lot of advice, as well as the younger guys. So I think that's something that D'Amico wants. But like one of the objections that people have told me, at least, and it's not like by far the majority of Texans fans are gung-ho about JJ coming back. But the thing I hear most commonly is like, look, he's been injured a lot. Like he's 35 years old and he's been injured a lot. Is that what you want to sign and bring in? That's not much of an argument in my mind for a couple reasons. And one is that I don't think that JJ himself is probably thinking of going an entire season. He right. might be. He might right. be. But I think, like, my suspicion is that it would be midway through the season. And then after that, just with all of those other names we just mentioned, that they rotate their defensive linemen. And, like, right now, you already have a group where if one guy goes down, you should have more depth and more rushers off the edge and on the inside than you had at any point last year. So I think the downside of JJ coming back is, A, he wouldn't, like, if you're worried about injury, he's not going to be playing nearly as much. And B, it's not like he's going to be like the one key thing that the Texans need to win a yeah. Super Bowl.
I wanted to say this because you reminded me of it now, in that if you're asking yourself the question, you know, and we don't know, is JJ considering playing all season? I don't know why I haven't considered that personally, because
yeah.
when we talked about that earlier this week, I've been pretty adamant about when I think JJ is going to come back, because I think if the Texans are good, he is going to come back, and I think it's going to be in and around the final month, possibly month and a half of the season. I told you, that's something that JJ's never done. Every year that JJ's played in the NFL, he's experienced a training camp. He's started the season, even if he's been hurt and he's had his season cut short. In some cases, he's been able to come back from injury, did it multiple times as a Houston Texan. Why would he, at the age of 35, think that, and why would we think that such a habitual, you know, person, somebody that's so regimented, so, you know, routine based, change something up, do something completely different, have to ramp up, you know, during like mid, way late in the season, just to preserve the body? Like, JJ, you're telling me we don't think JJ thinks he can make it through a whole NFL season? Well, you know what? I think I do, because I also think that JJ Watt understands that he's not going to be asked to play 90 to 100% of snaps. He's going to be asked yeah. to play, you know, probably somewhere between 20, 25% of snaps or something in that regard. So why aren't we more seriously considering that as a possibility is where my mind went right now.
I guess the other part of it then, that's where this comes in, is, look, there's a salary subject, you know, like, and nobody knows exactly how much JJ would expect to be compensated. And the Texans, I don't know if they've thought about it or not, but at yeah. some point, it is professional football, and he's going to have to sign a contract. And I think if I'm the Texans and I'm looking at it, realistically, I'm going to be like Joe Shane from the Giants, and the way he was thinking about it with Saquon Barkley is, realistically, I got to look at it and say, are we going to pay a good chunk of money for a guy to come on and take up a roster spot when he's 35 years old and he's had a bunch of injuries? And do we expect him to last the entire season? Versus, all right, I feel a lot better. Like, if I were Nick Caserio, I would feel a lot better about the prospects of him coming in and playing the last third of the regular season and mm-hmm. then making it into the playoffs. Mm-hmm. And then financially, that makes a lot more sense, too. Because at some point, you know, we just listed, they've got four or five defensive linemen who are all in their 30s or are turning 30 this year. One of those guys is going to get injured most likely along the way.
Yeah.
And at that point, it makes sense at some point midway through the season that you might be in the market for signing a new guy. And JJ has the benefit of not having played the first half of the season. That's the contract thing is a thing nobody wants to talk about. And I get it. I understand why I don't want to talk about it. But, like, let's say, just hypothetically, let's say if JJ was, like, demanding a $25 million a year contract, does that change your opinion about whether JJ should come back to the Texans or not?
No. I mean,
what?
Well,
so, like, 1 year, $25 million, you'd be cool with it.
If the Texans were cool with it, because at no point over the course of the last year and a half that the Texans have stopped pretending and lying to everybody that they were trying to win football games. When they hired D'Amico Ryans, when they got the quarterback and they got the cornerstone on defense and Will Anderson, and they had this offseason, and for the second straight offseason, really had the best in the NFL, and they become a serious organization. In no way, shape, or form has Nick Caserio been, you know, willy-nilly with money. And so if there was a way to make it work, and it was, he's we know he's sound of judgment and sound of mind. If he said, yes, this is possible, we just move money around and maybe defer or whatever. Sure, go ahead. It's not my money. I'll pull the whole Adam Spillane card out. Like, I don't care. It's not my money. Go ahead. If you can make it work and this is the year that you're supposed to be going in trying to win a Super Bowl, and JJ, you believe he's worth $25 million to do that, sure.
Yeah, okay, but listen, every GM makes mistakes. And, like, really, just because you like Nick Caserio doesn't mean that every decision that Nick Caserio makes is the good one or the right one or ends up working out. I said $25 million because I thought that was an extreme example. Like, yeah. I don't think that's what he expects to make on a one-year deal.
Yeah.
I don't think it would happen at $25 million. I don't think that's what JJ would expect, and I don't think that's what the Texans would be willing to give.
I agree, but I was just playing the game. Like, you know,
yeah,
you
that is, but well, it is something, though, that I think comes up. It's something that might hold things up a little bit. It's whatever Jerry Hughes is making. I didn't see the reported contract number or whatever. The Texans are obviously happy with that. And I would be surprised if it had gotten to the point with the Texans where they've even discussed numbers with JJ. You know, I think they probably just kind of joked about it with him at times themselves. But that's where I'll have to go back and look at, like, Ndamukong Suh's contract when he went back to the Eagles.
Yeah.
And everything else.
Since I interjected his name, Adam Spillane is in studio right now with John Lopez in the loop coming up at 10 o'clock. I just mentioned you because I went ahead and pulled that card. It's not my money. You know, that's one of your favorite sayings. How much is too much for the Texans to spend on a potential J.J. Watt reunion?
I don't really think it really matters. I mean, it's not like it cuts into your cap for next year, so whatever he wants, whatever you can fit under the cap, there you go.
Right, okay. Yeah, but it does, though. It like, everything cuts into every year because you can roll over cap, but also, like, you've got to have cap space. You got to have cap space to handle injuries and, like, in-season acquisitions and all of that, and without having to unduly push stuff off into the future. So it's not, like, Adam, you're not one of these "the salary cap doesn't exist" guys, are you?
No, I'm okay, not Mickey Loomis over here.
I just have started recently wondering, okay, yeah, what is the actual dollar amount? Like, what would the Texans be comfortable spending on J.J. Watt? Because I don't think it's whatever price he demands. I think there probably is a number they have in mind.
J-Lo, what do you think? Is there a number that would make you feel uncomfortable, that would be kind of like awkward?
I actually don't think...
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Sean Bajani in for Sean Pendergast this morning along with Seth Payne. Just a reminder for today, because it is ongoing right now. If you are still one of the ones in need of ice, water, a little food, disaster relief items, you can hit up 501 Crawford Street outside of Minute Maid Park, baby. That's where they're at. You've got Chick-fil-A, Houston Food Bank, and the Red Cross out there providing those items to continue to help those in need. Shout out to the Astros and the Astros Foundation for making that happen. Also, the Houston Rockets very much involved, along with Toyota Center, Rocket President of Business Operations Gretchen Shear, along with Harris County Commissioner Rodney Ellis, and various Rocket legends. They are lining cars up right now as we speak. 9 o'clock is when it began. Cars lining up at the intersection of Polk and La Branch. They've got supplies for you in case you need them. And I know many, many people do. I've said this before too, Seth. A lot of the people that are in still need, and not all, but a lot of the people that are still in need of some of these supplies, they're kind of out and about in the suburban areas. I know maybe gas in those areas is a little scarce, and, you know, long wait times to refill generators and cars and stuff like that. Drive into town because it is a different world. And you can also get maybe some supplies that you can take back home as well to help you and your family through the rest of this week and into the weekend before you get power restored, hopefully, all of you, this weekend.
One of our listeners just sent this to us during the break. In case you were looking at Sports Illustrated and this headline got you distraught, I don't want to just know that it's probably a typo, but on SI right now, headline, Houston Texans rank lowly in updated NBA power rankings following free agency. And it's got a picture of Şengün and Jalen Green on the bench. So my plan to play Şengün at center for the Texans, it doesn't seem to be probably, it looks like it's frowned upon by Sports Illustrated at this point. We'll keep you updated on it. I was like, looks like I wrote the headline. Me with my messing names up all the time. It's been up for like 45 minutes. It's still up there. The AI writers at SI have not yet figured out that they screwed up by calling the Rockets the Texans.
Yeah, man, get it together, SI. Let's fix that, huh? I asked this question. I already know the answer to it, but apparently there are detractors. There are conversations being had, and I think it would be mind-numbing for me to be a part of said conversations. I have not heard, I have not seen, read anything that has ever made a good point about why the Texans should not bring J.J. Watt back. Obviously, that was big news again this week because of the Twitter picture that J.J. had put out of him looking all kinds of sculpted on Twitter.
Yeah, looking very much like he could play football, right this moment. Compared to last year where he had kind of just been, messing around in hotel gyms and stuff
play
and not
football
working out.
Or auditioning for an Abercrombie & Fitch model. Like, I don't know. Like, but certainly great.
I've had quite a few people come at me with counter arguments to it, and some of them have some good validity to it, because there would be some things where it wouldn't necessarily be a good idea. But part of it got me thinking about it, was when the Texans signed Jerry Hughes, I was kind of going around looking for some Jerry Hughes information, and I ran across this old interview of Will Anderson on the Greenlight podcast from last year's training camp. But Chris Long, the host, asked Will about Jerry Hughes. And this is what Will Anderson said about what a great influence Jerry Hughes had been for him at the time.
Yeah, it's been great. Like, Jerry probably doesn't even know, like, even though I ask him questions here and there, I literally watch everything Jerry does, from the way he warms up to the way he takes the field. I watch all his reps. I watch when he comes off the field. I watch when he has a break, everything. And he's constantly, the thing that, like, separates him from everybody else, he's constantly working his craft. Yep. If it's on break, he's doing hands. He's doing, like, tight toe turns and everything like that. He's, like, just everything. And for me, just watching that, I said, that's how you stay in the league this long. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
He practices like he's still a rookie. You know what I'm saying? And that's what I respect about him so much. Like, people joke a lot saying, like, take this day off, take that day off. He's like, no. You know what I'm saying? At this age, he still has that drive, everything. And he pours so much back into all the guys in the room. Like, he'll say, Coach, can you stop the tape? Will, you could have did this, you could have did that, and I'm just with my notepad writing it all down.
So, like, obviously, that's one really good influence to have on Will Anderson, is having Jerry Hughes there.
Yeah.
And it's not like it's cool because Will Anderson is not the kind of rookie that needs older guys around to tell him to, like, hey, sit up straight and actually pay attention. What are you doing? Will doesn't need any guidance in terms of working hard. He's already got all of that. It's the actual technical stuff, the advice, the all of the football stuff and the rehab stuff, like all of that stuff. They are great resources for them.
Yeah.
For Will and those other young guys. And they've got, at this point now, with Jerry Hughes is going to be 36 years old, Mario Edwards is going to be in his 30s. Daniil Hunter is going to turn 31 or 30 this year. They've got, and I'm leaving
Danico Autry.
Out. Oh yeah, Danico Autry's 33.
Yeah,
like they've got some old heads in there to give him to give Will a lot of advice, as well as the younger guys. So I think that's something that D'Amico wants. But like one of the objections that people have told me, at least, and it's not like by far the majority of Texans fans are gung-ho about JJ coming back. But the thing I hear most commonly is like, look, he's been injured a lot. Like he's 35 years old and he's been injured a lot. Is that what you want to sign and bring in? That's not much of an argument in my mind for a couple reasons. And one is that I don't think that JJ himself is probably thinking of going an entire season. He might be. But I think, like, my suspicion is that it would be midway through the season. And then after that, just with all of those other names we just mentioned, that they rotate their defensive linemen. And, like, right now you already have a group where if one guy goes down, you should have more depth and more rushers off the edge and on the inside than you had at any point last year. So I think the downside of JJ coming back is, A, he wouldn't, like, if you're worried about injury, he's not going to be playing nearly as much, and B, it's not like he's going to be like the one key thing that the Texans need to win a Super Bowl.
I wanted to say this because you reminded me of it now, in that if you're asking yourself the question, you know, and we don't know, is JJ considering playing all season? I don't know why I haven't considered that personally, because when we talked about that earlier this week, I've been pretty adamant about when I think JJ is going to come back, because I think if the Texans are good, he is going to come back, and I think it's going to be in and around the final month, possibly month and a half of the season. I told you that's something that JJ's never done. Every year that JJ's played in the NFL, he's experienced a training camp. He's started the season, even if he's been hurt and he's had his season cut short. In some cases, he's been able to come back from injury, did it multiple times as a Houston Texan. Why would he, at the age of 35, think that, and why would we think that such a habitual, you know, person, somebody that's so regimented, so, you know, routine-based, change something up, do something completely different, have to ramp up, you know, during, like, mid, way late in the season, just to preserve the body? Like, JJ, you're telling me we don't think JJ thinks he can make it through a whole NFL season? Well, you know what? I think I do, because I also think that JJ Watt understands that he's not going to be asked to play 90 to 100% of snaps. He's going to be asked to play, you know, probably somewhere between 20, 25% of snaps or something in that regard. So why aren't we more seriously considering that as a possibility is where my mind went right now.
I guess the other part of it then, that's where this comes in, is, look, there's a salary subject, you know, like, and nobody knows exactly how much JJ would expect to be compensated, and the Texans, I don't know if they've thought about it or not, but at some point it is professional football, and he's gonna have to sign a contract. And I think if I'm the Texans and I'm looking at it realistically, I'm gonna be like Joe Shane from the Giants, and the way he was thinking about it with Saquon Barkley is, realistically, I gotta look at it and say, are we going to pay a good chunk of money for a guy to come on and take up a roster spot when he's 35 years old and he's had a bunch of injuries? And do we expect him to last the entire season? Versus, all right, I feel a lot better. Like, if I were Nick Caserio, I would feel a lot better about the prospects of him coming in and playing the last third of the regular season and then making it into the playoffs. Mm-hmm. And then financially, that makes a lot more sense too. Because at some point, you know, we just listed, they've got four or five defensive linemen who are all in their 30s or are turning 30 this year. One of those guys is going to get injured most likely along the way.
Yeah.
And at that point, it makes sense at some point midway through the season that you might be in the market for signing a new guy. And JJ has the benefit of not having played the first half of the season. That's the contract thing is a thing nobody wants to talk about. And I get it. I understand why I don't want to talk about it. But, like, let's say, just hypothetically, let's say if JJ was, like, demanding a $25 million a year contract, does that change your opinion about whether JJ should come back to the Texans or not?
No. I mean,
what?
Well,
so, like, 1 year, $25 million, you'd be cool with it.
If the Texans were cool with it, because at no point over the course of the last year and a half that the Texans have stopped pretending and lying to everybody that they were trying to win football games. When they hired DeMeco Ryans, when they got the quarterback and they got the cornerstone on defense and Will Anderson, and they had this offseason, and for the second straight offseason, really had the best in the NFL, and they become a serious organization. In no way, shape, or form has Nick Caserio been, you know, willy-nilly with money. And so if there was a way to make it work, and we know he's sound of judgment and sound of mind. If he said, yes, this is possible, we just move money around and maybe defer or whatever. Sure, go ahead. It's not my money. I'll pull the whole Adam Spillane card out. Like, I don't care. It's not my money. Go ahead. If you can make it work, and this is the year that you're supposed to be going and trying to win a Super Bowl, and JJ, you believe he's worth $25 million to do that? Sure.
Yeah, okay, but listen, every GM makes mistakes. And, like, really, just because you like Nick Caserio doesn't mean that every decision that Nick Caserio makes is the good one or the right one or ends up working out. I said $25 million because I thought that was an extreme example. Like, yeah. I don't think that's what he expects to make on a one-year deal.
Yeah.
So, like, I don't think it would happen at $25 million. I don't think that's what JJ would expect, and I don't think that's what the Texans would be willing to give.
I agree, but I was just playing the game. Like, you know,
yeah,
you
that is, but, well, it is something, though, that I think comes up. It's something that might hold things up a little bit. It's whatever Jerry Hughes is making. I didn't see the reported contract number or whatever. The Texans are obviously happy with that. And I would be surprised if it had gotten to the point with the Texans where they've even discussed numbers with JJ. You know, I think they've probably just kind of joked about it with him at times themselves. But that's where I'll have to go back and look at, like, Ndamukong Suh's contract when he went back to the Eagles.
Yeah.
And everything else.
Since I interjected his name, Adam Spillane is in studio right now with John Lopez in the loop coming up at 10 o'clock. I just mentioned you because I went ahead and pulled that card. It's not my money. You know, that's one of your favorite sayings. How much is too much for the Texans to spend on a potential J.J. Watt reunion?
I don't really think it really matters. I mean, it's not like it cuts into your cap for next year, so whatever he wants, whatever you can fit under the cap, there you go.
But it does, though. It like everything cuts into every year because you can roll over cap, but also, like, you've got to have cap space. You got to have cap space to handle injuries and, like, in-season acquisitions and all of that, and without having to unduly push stuff off into the future. So it's not like, Adam, you're not one of these "the salary cap doesn't exist" guys, are you?
No, I'm okay, not Mickey Loomis over here.
I just have started recently wondering, okay, yeah, what is the actual dollar amount? Like, what would the Texans be comfortable spending on J.J. Watt? Because I don't think it's whatever price he demands. I think there probably is a number they have in mind.
J-Lo, what do you think? Is there a number that would make you feel uncomfortable, that would be kind of like awkward?
I actually don't think, and Seth might disagree with me on this. I everybody wants to get paid, and one more check, it's always good. It's money that you can't really make anywhere else.
Yeah.
I actually don't think that J.J. Watt is going to, like, negotiate too hard. I think it's going to be like, hey, does this sound right? Cool, let's go. You know, it's not going to be like $27 million or something like that. I mean, I just don't feel
it's
that
not
going to
be like the Roger Clemens situation
that's
back in the day,
why,
right?
Yeah, that's not the why, as people like to say.
Yeah,
I think
his
why is different.
That's what we think. That's what I assume too.
Yeah,
but you never know. It's a potential. It's a potential roadblock to them signing J.J. Watt. Like, on either side, maybe J.J. has, like, very reasonable demands, but the Texans are like, nah, you're coming back at minimum or nothing. This is for love of the game, J.J.
Yeah, I don't think there's going to be a Clemens situation where J.J.'s like, I want this much money, and I'm only going to go to road games that are on the East Coast in this time zone. You know, you have all these little things that he's requesting for the organization. Now, I think he's in. I told you, it's ultimately about the ring. And he wants the ring with the Texans. And if financially they can make it work and make it fair and make it not silly, for better or worse, I do think he's going to be all in for that, Seth. Hey, fun week this week, man. I enjoyed it.
Yeah. Good job filling in with no power, no food. You haven't eaten in 3 days. Yeah, you're basically destitute. And
eaten. Shower? That's another story.
That's a different story.
Yeah.
It was within the context of being a sports radio host. It was a heroic effort. Actual heroism, but a heroic effort by you in your role.
On our level. Yeah, I appreciate that, man. Have a good week, man. We'll definitely catch up with you. For Seth Payne, I'm Sean Bajani. You are listening to KILT FMHD2, an Odyssey station.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Get your head in the financial game with smart investing and budgeting tips straight from the nerds. NerdWallet's experts will set future you up for success with dependable, fact-based insights. No financial misinformation allowed. Learn how to save on your summer vacation, find your next credit card or loan for a big purchase, and invest in your next index fund. Make smarter decisions in 2024. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy daybeds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.